Welcome to the Excel Magazine podcast. Dive deep with us into the mesmerizing world of immersive tech, where we bring you conversations with the trailblazers of XR, AI, and spatial computing. If you're curious about what's on the horizon and eager to be inspired, you're in the right place. Tune in and let's explore the digital frontier together. Our guest today in the podcast is Tony Bevilacqua, who is the founder and CEO of Cognitive 3D, a spatial analytics platform that gathers data from virtual and augmented reality experiences in new ways and turns them into actionable insights. Specifically, Cognitive 3D helps companies measure human behavior within 3D simulations. Through the use of immersive technology, Cognitive 3D identified an incredible opportunity to collect spatial intelligence, leveraging virtual, augmented, and mixed reality devices as a vehicle for data collection. Today, their technology provides an innovative approach to consumer research, which enables brands to develop better product strategy and understand consumer behaviors through a unique, quantitatively measured platform. I can't wait to begin. This sounds amazing. Let's do it. Thank you so much, Tony, for being here with us today. We're super excited. How is everything going in Vancouver?
Hi, Diana. Thanks for having me. Things are great in Vancouver. I mean, I just got back from traveling, so I've been on the road for almost a month at a variety of different conferences. So I was at Gamescom. Then we went to AWE Asia in Singapore, and then I was at a few conferences in San Francisco this week.
Oh, so, congratulations.
Yeah, it's been a busy time. So Vancouver has been not top of mind the last couple of weeks. I wasn't here.
Yes. Oh, but that's amazing, you know, expanding and making connections and bringing Cognitive 3D to many other people or businesses interested. Thank you so much for sharing that. So please let us know a little bit about your background, your story, where all of this got started. And I mean, of course, from any point that you want to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, Cognitive 3D, we've been around since 2015. I'm actually a second time founder. So prior to this, I was a co-founder at another startup called Kinetic. And so during my time at Kinetic, we were building mobile analytics, you know, game-focused tools as well. And through that experience, you know, obviously got to build a product in a very saturated space. So on the analytics side, we were building something that looked a lot like Flurry and Mixpanel. These are very, like, you know, well-funded companies at the time. And through that experience, got to spend a lot of time with game developers. And so one of the things I did is I went and spent some time at GDC, the Game Development Conference in San Francisco. I think this was back in like 2015, and saw what was going on with like the DK2. And that was Palmer Luckey's new, you know, Oculus headset. And so, you know, I kind of came to a realization that I was really trying to build something that was on parity with kind of an incumbent platform. So something that was already well-established, well-funded, big teams. And so we were a much smaller company, not funded, and we were trying to build something much similar. So it always felt like we were behind the eight ball. And so when I saw what was going on in the immersive space, I went to GDC first. Then I went to Vision Summit. Then I went to a few other conferences and really got a sense of like what was going on in the industry. I realized that there was a real opportunity to do something innovative, something that is different, something that could potentially contribute in a much larger way. And so I really founded Cognitive 3D under this kind of thesis of what if we could use the headset as a vehicle for data collection? Right? Like, what would the opportunity be if we knew what people were doing within the environment? And that quickly evolved into this, you know, general ideation that, you know, in mobile, it's all about content consumption. We have a very passive relationship with our mobile devices, and we're from the outside looking in. And when we think about, you know, immersive technology, we're a user participant. We're materially present within the experience, and I'm part of the content as opposed to consuming it. And I think that that was a really big shift in just my thinking. And so I decided to form up Cognitive 3D late 2015, ended up bringing on a first employee early 2016, and we've been building the product ever since.
Wow, that sounds super exciting. And I think that it makes all sense, your realization there of being in such a crowded market and looking more into what innovative possibilities can we see here now with this new technology. So I think
that scoping a feature that's already exists with another vendor, you know, is a lot different than coming up with a solution for a fresh new problem that doesn't necessarily have clear answers yet. So I think that's what really kind of attracted me to it.
Yeah, thank you so much. So, okay, so we're a little bit familiar with how the analytics look like for a device like this. We know that it's flat. We know that it's about engagement, how many people is entering, where they are clicking, these type of things. But when it comes to a spatial medium, what does actually a spatial analytics look like? Because people might be wondering, interesting. So now how is it measured there in a spatial environment? Could you please let us know a little bit about these foundations of what spatial analytics is?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is obviously one of my biggest challenges, right? Is helping educate our audience and potential customers what the differences are between a traditional kind of legacy analytics platform and ultimately what we do at Cognitive 3D. The reality is we focus entirely on spatial analytics. And what that means is we capture data on what's going on within the environment. So it's a little bit less about those kind of traditional metrics, as you mentioned. So clicks, taps, how somebody progresses through a funnel. These are very linear experiences, right? Like it has a very typical flow. How you move through the content is very predictable, and it's more just about did they make it or not, right? The reality with immersive content is that engines like Unity and Unreal, where people are building these experiences, they're building digital worlds, right? Worlds that we have agency in, that we have the ability to interact with. And so when you create a new world that has an unlimited possibility of what you could do and how you might be able to engage, you have to start thinking about, well, how do I measure that? What is the path to extracting insight from an environment like that? So if we kind of go back to that founding story, 2016, I had the same methodology. I'm going to build mobile analytics for VR. And so we started going down that path, listening to customers, you know, kind of showing off what we were thinking. And we were kind of going down the traditional metrics path. And what we kept on hearing from developers was they lacked visibility. They didn't understand how consumers or end users, participants were consuming the content, like what was going on inside the headset. And so that lack of visibility was enabled by the new media, right? So mobile, very traditional, very, you know, focused on that funnel, very predictable path, totally unpredictable now for these new developers. No tools exist to be able to understand what's going on in the headset. So we went with that thesis. We ended up doing a hackathon in Whistler, British Columbia. And so we took the whole team out and we went with this idea of how do we create visibility for developers? And we ended up creating a product during that hackathon called Scene Explorer. And Scene Explorer was really kind of our flagship product. It was our aha moment when we went from, you know, not having anything and, you know, focused on kind of delivering more of the same into delivering something that was innovative and new. And so Scene Explorer had the ability to visualize what a user did, how they behaved, how they interacted with space, how they moved through the content. It had the ability to capture our gaze. It had the ability to understand what people did with their hands, how they move through content, what dynamic objects or items captured and kept their attention within the experience. And from there, Scene Explorer and the data collection that we enabled behind it to make Scene Explorer work became the foundations for the rest of the company in terms of how we had to take things forward. So we started releasing additional tools like Scene Viewer, which is more about aggregate data. So we think about the asks, you know, developers are like, I have no visibility in what's going on in the headset. Okay, so we create visibility. Next step is I can't look at every single session to come to an insight. I need some aggregation. I need to be able to see behavior on an aggregate basis. So we introduced a tool called Scene Viewer. Scene Viewer allows you to aggregate a lot of different sessions into an aggregate view and get that insight across thousands of sessions instead of one at a time. And then from there, it was like, okay, now I've got all this spatial data. We've got our gaze, position, our events, maybe even sensors, other types of things. How do I measure success? Like, what is the way that I can understand a KPI? You know, because a funnel is really easy to understand. You know, did the user follow the step? But when you think about spatial data, there's a lot more inputs and it's beyond events. So we ended up creating something called the objective system, and that allows you to actually set up all of the criteria that reflect success completion or compliance, you know, within a particular scenario. And that fit really well for the customers that were using our tools.
That sounds very exciting. It makes me think a little bit of this recent announcement with Vision Pro, where they were showing heat maps. So for the gaze, because it doesn't have controllers anymore, or gaze, gesture, all of these type of things. So it sounds very interesting. And I think that most of the developers that I've interacted with, I haven't heard enough of how they are measuring all of these, you know, all of these KPIs or how they're doing it. So I think that is a very, very useful tool for sure. My next question would be, how a developer, first of all, let's say the developer understands the importance of having this data for the health of the company and for the health of the experience, the product, but how they integrate this into their own app? What's the process to that?
Yeah, so for sure. You know, the integration path is as simple as possible is kind of the idea here. And so we offer support for both Unity as well as Unreal. So these are, you know, the primary game engines in the XR space right now. We offer an SDK for both, or software development kit. It's imported as a plugin into either engine. And that acts as kind of a conduit for the data collection. So the SDK will have a nice little setup wizard to kind of get you all started. You put in your API keys, you sign up on cognitive3d.com for the actual dashboard, grab your API key, put it into the engine, and then ship your product, right? And so that then starts to collect all the data and populate the dashboard with the outcomes. So I think that's kind of the most basic path, is installing the SDK and then getting it shipped into your build, and then you'll be able to start seeing the dashboards come to life.
That's exciting. And one of the questions that might be in the background of either developers or companies, especially these days that we see a lot of stuff related with artificial intelligence, and I myself think that at some point, artificial intelligence is going to enter to this scenario very strongly to analyze vast amounts of data and to provide these insights as well, what this cognitive 3D is doing. How do you ensure that the data that cognitive 3D is capturing is kept super encrypted or private, or how does it work?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll tackle the first one first. You know, we focus a lot on helping our customers extract KPIs and value proposition from the platform. So tools like Scene Explorer, Scene Viewer, the Objective System, these are enablers, you know, to kind of help you, you know, measure and understand what's going on within the content. One of the things we've been spending the last year or so on is really digging into what makes good quality content. And that's really been an area that, you know, most developers, as well as the platforms themselves, right? We think the actual HMD providers, that good quality applications drive key KPIs kind of across the category. So when we think about, you know, what's going to create good retention, what's going to create longer session times, it really boils down to quality. And when we think about quality, it's like, well, how do you quantify that word, right? And I think that for us, we boiled it down into three key categories. The first is in comfort. So demonstrating different inputs that we can automatically measure that demonstrate good comfort within an overall experience. The second one is around presence. So how present, how immersed are you within a particular 3D simulation? And the third is really around just raw application performance. And with those three pieces, we boil those into scores that the developer can use as kind of a leading indicator on, you know, are we moving in the right direction or not from a content perspective? And where are the areas of improvement that I can make to my application? A number of our customers actually use us for data collection and data visualization, but they'll also have additional capabilities on their side where they get into machine learning, Other types of data warehousing or other types of things that help them extract unique KPIs or unique value proposition for their overall organization. So I think that the key here is to demonstrate the art of the possible through the dashboards in terms of like showing them what the capabilities are, deliver on tools that cover 90% of the use cases. And then from there, enable the customer further or the developer further with the ability to export, extend, or integrate Cognitive 3D into other things. And I think that that's really been our path moving forward. Do you want to say anything before I move on to the privacy piece?
No, go ahead. Yeah, it's so interesting. Cool.
Second piece you asked about is really around privacy. And so this is obviously like a super important area for Cognitive 3D. And it's really been kind of top of mind since we founded the company. Like it's always been the first question that comes to mind when you're thinking about an analytics platform that has such great capability to measure and understand. With that capability comes great responsibility in terms of how you store that data, how it's used, consent, and visibility for end users in terms of how their data is being collected. And so one of the things that we realized going down this path is that the headset manufacturers, at least most of them, I'm going to leave Meta as just kind of an exemption for the moment, don't necessarily have any sort of consent framework for being able to collect, different types of insights from these experiences. And so we ended up creating a tool called the XR Privacy Framework. And so the XR Privacy Framework is a consent framework. So it allows you as a developer to install a consent box within your application. So you can actually say, this developer wants to collect data to make their experience better. They would like to collect your gaze data, your position data, that sort of thing. And you can actually opt out or opt in to that data collection. And so XRPF acts as kind of like a do not track signal. There was this concept in mobile, like 10, 15 years ago called do not track. And it really never took off because nobody wanted to, offer that capability in the mobile analytics space. So our thought was, if nobody's going to define do not track, why don't we define do not track for XR? And so we created the XRPF with that in mind, that we would define a signal that, we would respect as a SDK and as an analytics company, that if we see that signal, we will disable data collection for that end user. And so that's kind of the path that we've taken to go about this. Now I left Meta kind of off to the side for a second. Meta's kind of interesting in their strategy. They get a bad rap for data, but the reality is that these people are probably the most sophisticated in the world around developer data privacy and developer data policy. They actually have a developer data policy that you must use or must agree to publish anything on the Meta platform. They also have a developer data review process. And what that means is that if there is at-risk data being collected within the applications, you need to disclose to Meta what you're doing with it and how you're storing it. And so I think that, it's a really, interesting thing is that, Meta, I would argue, has really dug in on this particular category, and Cognitive 3D kind of aligns all of our data collection practices behind what they've created with that particular policy set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. I am writing a book about the no use of interfaces, because mm-hmm. in a spatial environment, pretty much, and more in the future, we could see the flat interfaces might not be needed, as we are seeing it right now. You say there is a straight path in traditional apps, but in a spatial is the user has the agency to go wherever they want. So there is not a design specific path to go. And I find that super interesting. In the book, I even speak about, privacy and all of this, how collecting the data to read and to better understand what people is enjoying in the experience. I think that more and more developers are going to need to integrate tools like this one to really understand that. So when you were speaking about presence as one of your three indicators, along with comfort and performance, how do you specifically measure presence? How does it work? If you could dive a little bit in detail about that, I'm very curious.
Yeah, for sure. So we've got a few different kind of inputs. I'll just touch on comfort and then I'll move into presence because they're very kind of interrelated.
Okay.
So on the comfort side, we look at a few primary inputs. The first one is around frame rate. So being able to understand like the overall performance in the application and dips within that KPI that can potentially create uncomfortable situations. Another one we looked at was called ergonomics. And so for ergonomics for us, we're looking at like pose and posture, right? So we're looking at uncomfortable situations that we might have put the end user in through the experience and being able to measure what was the relative time that we put the user into either poor pose or poor controller posture. And finally, orientation, just being able to understand the orientation and different type of activity that's going on within that experience. So that kind of makes up what we call a comfort score. And so that comfort score is a 0 to 100 score that just gives you a general indication. So you can kind of think of it as like a barometer, right? So the barometer goes up and down. And then maybe I have three different inputs to that barometer in terms of how I could make that score stronger or worse. And then we provide the tools to filter. So you can actually within the dashboard say, you know what, I'm going to look on this new scene, you know, that I just deployed and see how comfortable that might be. As opposed to what's going on in the rest of the application. You can also filter by specific devices or other types of inputs as well. Now, when we think about immersion, we actually use five inputs for immersion. And so on the immersion side, we're looking at just general engagement data. So this is like controller-based interaction within the experience, interaction with dynamic objects. Orientation-based data. So how much of the scene are they actually consuming? Like, are they actually like turning around, looking around, engaging with that? So we create like a spider web to kind of show you overall percentage of time in various different orientations within the experience. So you can kind of see like, are we really drawing the user in, or are they just, you know, standing stationary and not moving, you know, within the entire experience. Spatial coverage is very similar as well. So if I have a large, you know, kind of space available to me, you know, how much do they move around that space? How much of that space do they consume within the environment as well? Controller engagement, which is similar to ergonomics, but we're just looking at raw engagement in that case. And boundary interactions, so things that are negative in implications, right? So like constantly having the Guardian pop up in Oculus, for example, like not good, you know? And so those are kind of like, if we think about it this like as a demerit system, you know, if you're constantly drawing the user into the boundary because of poor design or whatever it might be, those are going to negatively impact your immersion scores.
What I love about your you know, the framework is that it's very specific onto what are the performance like indicators, like how exactly. I think many, I don't know if you agree, but in today's world we see many platforms that offer the possibility for user-generated content. Therefore, it's like anybody can build stuff, not just designers or not just developers, anyone. And what I've analyzed is that these people might not have the framework of this, right? Like, how important is ergonomics? You could create
Well,
anything, honestly.
Roblox is a good example, right? So Roblox just came out for VR, and it's, you know, Roblox games are not necessarily built, you know, for those types of environments. And I don't know that the tooling exists within that framework to be able to optimize for things like comfort, right? If we think about like just the stakes of what it means to create content in this category, I don't know of any mobile applications that have ever made me physically ill, you know, that have ever made me sick. And, you know, when I think about Roblox, I'm thinking about, you know, content creation strategy. I think it's a great idea to create scale, but the reality is that the stakes are really high to creating high quality content for end users, and that creating low quality content for end users could chase people off the platform. If you constantly have negative experiences on your headset, are you going to keep coming back?
And that affects the whole industry as a whole, like,
Yeah.
because people don't believe in those things anymore, just like trying things that are not even properly addressed. I don't know why there is not such a framework or something that is more, a little more, right, that help more in that direction, and that you know, the creation is it has certain guidelines, so all these things are more considered for people.
Yeah.
These type of experiences is special, is so as the real life. That's the idea. And so therefore it can affect physically people at this point. So yeah, it's such a great thing to discover, you know, like your platform. So what have been some of the maybe wow insights or interesting insights or any type of insights that you've gathered so far from the companies that have been using Cognitive 3D? Maybe things that are unexpected, maybe breakthroughs or something like that. What have you experienced by them
using? Yeah, I mean, the company has gone through a lot of growth, you know, in the last year or so. So we've grown from 5 employees to 15. Huge clients coming on board as well, and finding value in the product, not just for like specific enterprise use cases, but even the consumer ones as well. And so one of the things that that's afforded us is the ability to really dig into our own category. And I think that, you know, in the past, you know, 5 years or so, Cognitive has been very focused on how do we collect the data and how do we visualize it? The next step is how do we make sense of it and how do we create deep levels of value for our customers beyond the visualization itself? Mm-hmm. And so I've spent a lot of time in that category. We were lucky enough to hire a data scientist with a fantastic background, PhD, you know, kind of really deep fundamental understanding of spatial data. And it's only produced value so far. Like we're really digging into, you know, what makes good quality content. You know, we started working with some sophisticated developers and realized that there was different types of inputs that developers didn't have visibility on. A good example would be like sit versus stand ratios and being able to understand like the implication that that might have on performance, right? Or immersion or comfort. Like if we can demonstrate that and provide good indications on that, that might influence design enough to create, you know, a better outcome. And so I think that what we've been doing is really just peeling away the onion, right? Like we are getting really deep on what we're seeing kind of across our audiences and what super specific XR metrics that we can pull out and provide invaluable value to developers.
That sounds amazing. And one of the things that I've noticed during the conversation is that this tool is not only for, or it has the potential of not only being used for when the experience is already created, everything is out there, but also it might potentially inform early design. So, you know, when it's, tests are being having been conducted, prototypes are being built, to see what is the early reaction. So just the decisions, I mean, decisions are not left to after the product is in the market, but even before, to see what are the main behaviors and what things that have to be changed before. So I'm excited about this platform. I think that you are doing an amazing job at bringing this amazing tool. And of course, we're going to be sharing up for you and all the stuff that you are creating. I'd like to know at this point, what would be your advice as a, because you're an entrepreneur as well, what would be your advice for developers, designers that at this point are learning, you know, learning to navigate this industry? I feel that there is a responsibility there as well for when we're starting out in understanding these type of things, but what is your take or your advice for them?
Yeah, I mean, get out there and try things, I think is the biggest outcome, right? Like, you know, you need to test, you need to talk to your customers. I think that's always like the missing piece, is that you can get very wrapped up in the development of a product, but it's really important that you test it and you deploy it and you collect lots of feedback. And I think that that's something that we've even seen at Cognitive 3D. You mentioned it in your last comment there. You know, we're seeing customers come on really early to the platform, and the platform's totally free, by the way, for most developers that, you know, have not launched. And so, you know, they come on and they're able to collect really great QA insights in terms of like what's happening with their content and like where they might be able to optimize. But my argument here is just, you know, I think that as founders, entrepreneurs, developers, we can get really wrapped up in our assumptions and, you know, have such a strong belief in our thesis that we can kind of lose track of signal, right? And I think that it's really important for us to all keep a ear to the ground on signal and make sure that we have good insights to drive our organizations forward. And for developers in particular, that means testing and trying things and collecting feedback.
Absolutely. Data is the number one thing that can drive better decisions. That's for sure.
I also come from a background in engineering, so for me, data is super important, but there is an important job that we have to do in the educational side to help to, you know, help them to understand the importance of this. So that's what we're doing here today. Thank you so much for your amazing presentation, Tony. It's been so enlightening, especially to understand the impact of this data that we're not very often seeing people analyzing and that is very vital for any product or company. So thank you so much for that. Is there anything that you wish I had asked you today?
No, I think we got everything. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much. I just would like to wrap up by saying that Cognitive 3D is a platform that not only can be used for the games and entertainment side, but also academic consumer training, right? Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And some of our largest customers are really focused on training and simulation, not just for enterprise, but also K-12, vocational, university, you know, measuring academic performance or, you know, employee performance seems to be a superpower of immersive technology. And so, you know, Cognitive 3D is a way that you can measure those outcomes, not just on like, you know, did they do the work correctly? You know, did they move through the simulation correctly? But also, is this comfortable content? Is this something that we want to put users into? Are we creating an experience that is truly better than traditional methods? So I think that that's also a key piece there too.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for this amazing presentation, Tony. And if you like this episode or you, a friend or a family member, would be interested in watching it, please share it and subscribe and like if you enjoy this episode. Thank you so much and see you in the next episode. Bye for now.